Unit 0, Designation 6, JQ Blackburn. I'm continuing my account of my actions leading up to timestamp 001.000, the incident commonly known as Control, Alt, Delete, Reset. I would like to respond in general to some of the questions I've been receiving in my personal messages from people as I'm walking down the street and taking my dog out, from the group of people who accosted my entire unit while we were trying to have dinner, to the guy who tried to talk to me while I was using the restroom. This recording is not being made to answer all your questions. It is to aid the internal affairs investigation to keep my unit from being excommunicated from the organization that we founded. I'm already including way more detail than I should have to. So if you have more questions about the static core, the tools we use, the toys we play with, anything that's happening on grid, you need to consult the Doom Trooper's Guide. The Doom Trooper's Guide is your encyclopedia, not me. I know for a fact that you can see the first couple of chapters right now. If you can't see more than that, you're either doing it wrong or you haven't been cleared to see anything else. Now, at this point, me, Dade, Law, Hi-Rez, we had been on this wall for almost 10 hours. And this Gulf Gate State Barrier actually turned out to be a 300-mile-long graveyard. We rescued Pharaoh, and our rescue was on its way, but it was still a few minutes out. When we were in the thick of the fight, we realized that something smart had taken over the grid. Now, Versal deployed two tiers of munitions to try and fight us off. The standard issue security bots and even the construction drones had been turned into weapons against us, but then they sent in four gun suites. And these were mid-size, about 8 feet tall. They were tier two gun suites, so they had at least three kinds of guns, small rounds, medium rounds, and then some heavy cannons. A gun suite is a general term for anything with more than three kinds of guns on it. Luckily, these were all still just using electromag propulsion. Now, our first thing was to figure out who or what was in control and to what extent they were actually gathering information on our tactics. The second was making sure we didn't lose track of anything shooting at us. It was like watching elephants move among wildebeests, watching these gun suites roll or walk around with surrounded by all the smaller droids. Oh, that's right. Most of you have probably never even seen or heard of an elephant or a wildebeest. It's like watching a Mack truck move around with a bunch of small cars. The extra droids that Pharaoh had been controlling went down first, but not before they had built us a barrier. Now, it was substantial, but it didn't last very long under the cannon fire from the gun suites. We started lobbing shaped grenades, which blasted 8-foot-deep square craters all around us, making the area a random checkerboard. Randomness and chaos is our first answer to their strict order. Even the most basic AI can deal with irregular patterns, but it does slow it down. This worked for taking out both of the rolling gun suites. The grenades all had a second round proximity charge, so when the bots fell, they got blown to pieces. By the time we detected a clear shift in the tactics, they had started firing at the barrier that had been protecting us. Now, another rule to remember when working on grid is that the harder you go, the harder they come. We could have gone bigger, thrown out more grenades, used explosive rounds, but all of that would have just made them send in more gun suites and bots. This was a numbers game, and the sovereign companies always had the advantage. We had to change tactics from trading gunfire to playing with the elements. Our crash landing off the air barge wasn't completely random. We chose it because it was close enough to one of the mobile chemical processing plants that we could use it as a fallback location. Retreats always have to be managed affairs. Me and Law held the line while the others fell back a short ways, then vice versa. They started firing, giving us a chance to leapfrog them on our way to the chemical plant. Now, these things are 40 feet tall, have several different tanks of various colors all clustered together, all of it feeding a nest of pumps and refilling hookups with outflow hoses, all of which is surrounded by a scaffolding and walkways that hold it together. There are thousands of baseline hacks built into your signal searcher that operate off the brain link. The more you use it, the faster it gets. Since I'm making lists, having computers controlled by my mind is one of the things that I love. When Hi-Rez and Pharaoh ran up to the chem plant, it had a basic check and pass security system, so the brain link allowed them to access it just like one of the tankers coming for a refill. The other hacks that they took advantage of allowed them to overclock and power up the pumps. On-grid systems use a lot of these common code systems, so take advantage. Supercharging the pumps that feed the hoses, Pharaoh and Hi-Rez waited till we were off the ground and climbing up the chemical plant, and then started spraying the area with liquid hydrain. The amped up pump sent crystal clear liquid spray 60 feet out, and as soon as there was a nice pool of it surrounding the droids, I threw a match to light it all up. Fire behaves very differently on grid, where it can be controlled somewhat. Most of you listening have probably never even seen real fire. Ironically, the way they show it on screen, if they ever do these days, it looks like the way fire looked before space was broken. The hoses belched orange and red liquid fire, and when it hit the ground, it spread like grease in a hot frying pan. Most of y'all probably also don't know what grease in a hot frying pan looks like either. Jeez. I don't know, just look up a video in the archive. Point being, liquid balls of fire slid over the concrete, bursting when they hit a bot or something else, and spread out. Grid fire is strangely beautiful. Instead of the random licking flames, it hugs the ground closely. Then at random places, a spire climbs in a weird web or wire work of squares, actually riding up the energy of the digital field. Usually it climbs just a few feet, but out here in wide open space like this, there wasn't anything or anywhere for the heat to go into. The fire also moves in straight lines, making 90-degree turns at random if not checked. It's always searching for someplace cooler to dump into. Elemental rounds have all manner of handy uses. In this case, Dade, Law, and myself started spraying glacier shots. Now, it would be really cool if these glacier shots actually froze targets solid into a big block of ice, but they really just work to bring the temperature down on anything they hit. This works well on the smaller bots, but unfortunately, the walking gun suites were too heavily armored and sealed tight, so they were able to walk right through our rounds and the fire. But as the temperature inside those bots started to come down under the ice shot, the fire shot straight forward. Six more drones carrying crates came from atop the wall into the pit. Before they could touch down, Pharaoh had alerted us to another change in the Di-Fi signal. Checking my wristwatch, that was the first time I saw a shadow trailing the second hand as it swept across the face, which indicates that time is moving slower than normal. It takes massive amounts of energy to slow down time, which is not something an AI would do, at least not without a human at the command. That at least told us we were dealing with a who and not a what. Later we would find out that who was Landite Rockshark, security commissioner for Miami Tardata Tech. It's important to know here that unless time is really being screwed with, you won't experience any noticeable difference if it's slowed down or sped up. In this case in particular, they were actually trying to gain more time to give their AI an edge. Milliseconds may as well be a million years to a digital mind. It takes too much power to prolong time dilation, so we knew this wouldn't last very long. Meanwhile, the crates they dropped sprung open and packs of dog bots came pouring out. These things are 3 feet high at the head, four-legged, fast, pack firearms and tasers, can melee with retractable claws or batons, and sometimes they even have chemical weapons. Never think these companies don't have a sense of humor. It's sick and diabolical, but it's well intact. I've been pissed on by more than my fair share of dog bots. Because these things are small, they're easy to armor, but their real strength is in numbers, and that they can be detonated at any time, making them extremely dangerous. The first wave jumped right into the fire. The moon was kind of genius. The explosions burned up most of the high drain, and on top of that, it sent shrapnel flying everywhere. We still don't know what these things were made of or if the shrapnel they were packing was some kind of special ordnance, but the debris flying off them became a problem since some of it cut right through our suits and super skins and went in for serious injury. Now the skin saved us from mortal injury, but my midsection was jacked up. Everyone save Hi-Rez and Pharaoh was hurt. Another key indicator to monitor in your heads-up display is your health panel. You can't just look at your lifeline. Remember, you have to look at everything that's in there. Back in my early days, I can't count the number of times I almost lost my life because my lifeline looked strong, but I was having a toxic gas build up in my blood or my neurons were spiking. And I don't know how many times I've done rescue ops for new digits that made the same mistake. Tardata crashed a chemical plant with the last crate that was emptied. When the drone took off, it held on to it and dropped it right on top of us as it flew overhead. We didn't have a chance to get out of the way before getting doused in God knows what kind of chemicals. No one was crushed at that point, but before we could regroup, the grid started buzzing, and then the chemicals we were soaked in started lighting up, getting hot, and the integrity of our suits already being compromised. Pharaoh's droid started falling apart at the joints as all the soft materials dissolved. We were soaked in the same stuff they had used to melt those people. The rubbers and plastics on Pharaoh's droid all turned to goo. His gait got rickety. Pharaoh ran as far as his droid body would take him, and then it finally fell to pieces. Dade ripped his containment unit from the wreckage and strapped it to his back. When we finally got the message that our rescue was on its final approach, we had to get near the edge of the wall, which was lined with huge blocks. Not the massive foundation stones they had been crushing people with. These were only 20-foot squares. I try to always avoid running into places where I might get crushed, but there was no option. The whole construction pit was surrounded with these blocks, and they were lined up in neat rows, and on the other side was our ride out. I heard the buzzing of attack drones in the distance. Since the stationary guns and the gun suites hadn't managed to pick us off, they sent in a flying swarm. Similar to the dog bots, they could shoot or just kamikaze, but again, their strength is in numbers. With the dog bots and the one remaining walking gun suite at our back, we headed into the gaps between these bricks. It was 200 yards to the other side, and before we could get too far, I started to feel the floor vibrate. The blocks started shifting. Yes, like some big crazy video game. jolting back and forth. They wanted to score points by turning us into bloody smears. It was like being inside a thundercloud when the blocks came together. Add to that the 30mm cannon on the gun sweep firing explosive rounds. That thing was turning those concrete blocks to rubble with just three or four shots. The concussive force of the rounds hit us with shockwaves heavy enough that we all got knocked down at least once or twice. The drones were swooping down, taking shots. I got hit dozens of times, and a few of the shots hit a crease where my armor had already been melted away. To date, I have been shot 1,635 times. That's only counting time the bullets actually drew blood. The drones, the dogs, the blocks, it's all a lot to keep track of if you don't learn to read the digital field and use your static scanners. You're gonna die. Period. Now, just to be clear, just because you learn to read the grid and use your static scanner, it doesn't guarantee you'll survive. I mean, it just keeps you one swing ahead of the sword. The 10-foot gaps between the blocks got narrower every time they came together, and with all the rubble that was building up, it got trickier and trickier moving through. With the dust, it made it hard to navigate. The constant banging wreaked havoc with our echolocation, so we tried to move by LIDAR, but even that was a problem. The dog bots made a hell of a noise, clawing and scratching their way through the blocks. They rattled as they banged against the sides and climbed over each other. They had the advantage of being small. They could leap long distances, lunging at us, bounding in these huge arcs. The dog's teeth and claws didn't really do much damage all on their own, but they kept tripping us up, and then the explosions kept peppering us with more of the shrapnel. They pressed us to run faster than we would have wanted to, and that's why I fell 20 feet to the deck straight onto my face. As soon as we got clear of the blocks that we could see, the ground started opening up. We were 50 yards from the lip of the barrier, and the ground just split open. I was in the lead, so I took the first hit. Luckily, Hi-Rez was right behind me and linked onto one of the rings on my shoulder with his magic rope and pulled me out while I was still collecting my marbles. Static core model number 25. The buddy system saves lives. Unfortunately, it didn't save my right leg. It got crushed below the knee. And by crushed, I mean completely flattened. When the blocks that I had fallen between clapped together again. I never go on a mission with my pain receptors turned on. Some people say this is foolish. You make your own choice. It took both Hi-Rez and Dave to prop me up while my super skin got ready to cut the limb loose. When you did your medical intake, you got a series of injections. One of them was with stuff we called Dust Maker. It's a chemical compound that allows us to either detonate or render anything inert. Versions of it work on biological and inorganic materials. Every piece of equipment sanctioned by the Corps has to contain some kind of dustmaker protocol. I felt the pressure of my skin suit draw tight around my calf and shin as I thought through the commands, confirming that I wanted my leg to be amputated. This is one of those times I looked at my entire health panel. My vitals took a dive but stabilized. Hi-Rez stuck by my side as I hobbled along. And as soon as we were far enough away from the blocks where what was left of my leg was sticking out, I detonated it. It was dicey hopping and skipping over the last few blocks, even with help from the guys. Looking out over the edge of the barrier, the lip of the wall was just another 100 yards down a 45-degree slope into the sea, and in the distance we saw dark clouds rolling over the surface of the water. The blue smoke screen was covering the tugboats that were coming for our rescue. never trust what looks like a wide open field. Even though we couldn't see any type of security feature built into this part of the barrier, we just assumed they were there. With all the war machines behind us, we didn't have any time to plot a sophisticated escape. Now, don't get me wrong. Hell, if our plan had worked, we would have went out through the sink gate at the transit zone and disappeared into one of the islands in the second flex and watched that wall blow up from a distance. But that's not what was happening. At that moment, we had to read the grid while we were sliding over it like thrill seekers playing Russian roulette. My main concern was not taking a bump and tumbling end over end. Avoiding the pitfalls was a bit easier since they show up on the scans, but these smart guys covered the wall in 2D objects. In this case, long spikes. As we were sliding down the wall, twisting to avoid the pits, Dade ran into a spike and it tried to punch a hole through his chest. It sent him tumbling head over heels. 2D objects are the other thing in my top three most hated. To recap that short list, it also includes broken static signals and automated defenses. 2D objects are not actually two-dimensional. One of their dimensions is so narrow as to render the thing invisible from certain angles. We couldn't see these spikes until we were going past them. These spears are strong when hit head-on, but fragile when torqued. I caught one in the side, and since my suit was compromised by shrapnel from the dog bots, it tore me open and snapped off. Super skin to the rescue again. It was only a flesh wound. But when I landed, I heard Law scream out in pain, and moments later felt something starting to turn inside me. Law's arm got filleted on a spear. I saw it break off, and then the muscles on his arms were flapping as when his limb went limp. The shrapnel was moving around inside me, cutting deeper into my tissues, and it was doing the same to everybody else. Dade managed to claw his way back up the slope to where we were and pulled both of us down the final stretch of the wall by itself. The last thing I recall from my real memory is seeing my blood pressure indicator flashing as the numbers went down and the feeling of my skin suit tightening to try and keep me alive. I saw the smoke screen from the tugboats creep up before they made landfall at the bottom of the wall, and then I blacked out. Looking back at the recall video from my mission log, I saw where Doza and Cakes from my unit rolled up and snatched us off the ground. Fortunately, they found their section chief and were able to get geared up and down to business right away. There are two ways to look at every mission: how it went down and how it looked. Now, we achieved our main goal, which was finding our commander and subsequently rescuing him. It is the standard operating procedure to lay traps and prepare all enemy infrastructure for destruction immediately or at some point in the future. And to be honest, we did get a little giddy with sabotaging the barrier since it had been a while since we had got a chance to get our hands dirty. In terms of how it went well. In terms of how it looked, the fact that we almost got killed made it ugly. I was thrown in a medical pod right away when we got on the boat. My mind was woken up a few minutes later in a virtual interface. The doctor needed my help syncing with my IMS, which was engaged in combat with the shrapnel. Sophisticated internal medical systems are not strictly passive or even AI controlled. You can connect with it like any other computer, which allowed me to see inside my own body as the barbed edges of the metal from the dog bots sliced through me. They moved around with razor sharp cilia sliding through my tissues, leaving a trail of blood and bits of flesh. my IMS jetted around and darted whipping tentacles around the black shards like tiny kraken trying to sink ships. But every time they tried to seize a piece of the shrapnel, it broke into smaller pieces. The doctor had already injected me with several more sets of temp imps to back up my systems, and I took a bit of control to get the situation in check. It was obvious whatever this material in our systems, whatever this material was in our systems, couldn't be read like normal. Instead of trying to wrap up the bits and hold them in place, I guided my imps into grouping up and making themselves into nets with their tentacles so they could surround the pieces. Once this strategy was found to be successful, they were able to surgically remove the pieces, and the tactic was exported to the rest of the team. I promptly passed back out, because even though I had my pain receptors off, the pain was still putting a lot of stress on my body. Several hours later, I woke up in a hospital in the Philippines, just in time to be fitted with a prosthetic leg. Now, I could have been fitted with a living transplant grown from my own organs or tissues. Those things just take time to acclimate to the body, and this was no time to be clumsily breaking in a new leg. This will make the fifth time I've lost my right leg below the knee. For the sake of specificity, I've also lost a leg above the knee 3 times. Detailed specs for every prosthetic I've ever used, and all the rest of my medical history for that matter, is saved in multiple places. In my IMS, my dog tags, the doctor. Just about every piece of equipment you'll use, from tools to toys, your super skin, your armor, even your incredible underwear, has biofeedback built in, so it pulls out tons of data. As creepy as it might sound to have drawers that can decode the stink of your farts, it saved more than a few lives when people have been sick or poisoned or developed some kind of disease whose earliest symptom was a subtle change in their biochemistry, which caused a shift in the pungence of their flatulence. Thank God for my favorite bioengineer, Megdala. She didn't go missing or get killed while I was in the freezer. Shout out if you're listening, Megs. As soon as my leg got crushed, she got a signal with a detailed readout on the nature of my injury. Got right to work and headed to the hospital. Now, speaking of artificial limbs, give me a minute. I need to pop off my leg and let this stump air out. I'll be back in a moment. FYI, nothing itches like growing a new limb. So right now I'm actually sitting here looking at pieces of this shrapnel floating in some sterile solution. When I finish this recording, I'm going to continue researching their composition so we can mitigate. Having this stuff cutting its way through me was a reminder the battlefield isn't always out there. All too often it's going to be in your chest cavity. Anyway, getting to the hospital was a breath of fresh air. I usually hate hospitals, but this place was nice. Lots of plants, natural light, good food. It was basically what I expected to find back in my home region. Quality facilities run by professionals. Law's arm was salvageable, but barely. He still ended up with an augmented brace and a hard shell so he could get back on the clock. Dade was more or less no worse for wear, other than needing some surgery. He told me they dug all the shrapnel out and patched him back up before we even got to Baslian. Hi-Rez was basically unscathed since he's a full cyborg. He just needed a good cleaning to get some of the gunk out of his gears from when we were crawling around in the sewer basin. Getting Pharaoh up and running was the biggest challenge. Not in a technical sense. Like any other military organization with civilian oversight, the static co-op and corps does have its fair share of bureaucratic hoops. Pharaoh was declared KIA, killed in action, during his last mission, a fact that should have prevented him from being assigned as our section chief to begin with, but that's a complaint for a different time. He got a hell of a funeral, by the way. I actually watched the video. Coming back from the dead is rare, but not unheard of. Dying generates a mountain of forms that have to be processed, and coming back to life makes even more. Pharaoh's particular challenge, in addition to being dead, meaning that he no longer had any rights in the Corps or anywhere else, he also didn't have any of his stuff. After he was killed in the wall, all of his will was executed, and all of his possessions and assets were divvied up accordingly. Babazel Insurance is the finest provider of resurrection policies in the co-op. I recommend you get one of their policies. They're cheap, but helpful, if the unlikely ever happens. Most people want to get back to living status as soon as possible when they resurrect. And that's what we started working on while Pharaoh's body was being built. The room was a hive of activity. Hi-Rez was using some of the metal cutting tools to fine-tune the chassis they were building for Pharaoh. Dade and Law were talking to some of the other digits about the wall and getting up to speed on what was happening around the regions. I was leaning back on a chair, sending emails back and forth with Babazel as Pharaoh's face was being attached. We've seen so much stuff, like a cyborg getting a face put on is almost run of the mill. So when the table with Pharaoh's mechanical body was tilted up, nobody paid any mind. The doctors, engineers, and techs stepped back, and one of them handed him a mirror. I halfway watched, peeking over the monitor in front of me. Pharaoh stood up, walked across the room to the full-length mirror between the bathrooms. At this point, his face was the only part that looked human. The rest of him was still a machine. Then Pharaoh grabbed both sides of his head, crushing it in his hands. The room went completely silent. Twisting his head back and forth, the servos and actuators that worked the neck ripped free as the room echoed with the sounds of springs and hoses popping loose. He gave his head one final jerk and tore it free, dropping it to the ground. Pharaoh walked back over to the table, laid down, and sent a text message to the monitor that would have been above where his head was. He asked them to put the sensors and communications hardware that had been in the head somewhere else in his body, and to cap off his neck. His next text message told us to get back to work and to stop staring at him. A few hours later, we were all sitting in the hospital's war room, which might sound unusual, but most static facilities of any significant size have a war room. It doesn't matter whether it's a bakery or a daycare. The name war room is also something of an overstatement. It's a communications room used for planning of all kinds. It's got a host of secure communication systems, computers, and anything else people need to collab, whether they are physically there or beamed in. The one common feature, no matter the shape of the war room, is the central table with at least two rows of seating around it. We were looking at the Miami City Plex. We did have a secure lock on the distress call coming from Unit 675. We were also able to confirm the status of the rest of Pharaoh's unit, all of whom were alive, but we could not get them to respond to any communications. Mind you, at this point in time, I was only halfway into the conversation about how we were going to get them out. I was still dealing with the resurrection process. Pharaoh walked in, and all the chatter died down. There is something about a headless man walking around that will get your attention. The seat with the crown had been left empty for him. It's the head of the table. At this point, me, Dade, Law, and Hi-Rez were still under his command. Doza, Cam, Cakes, Shell, Monaco, Rude, and y'all all decided to join us in responding to Unit 675 distress call, so they were in the room too, along with a few other random digits that decided they wanted to tag along. I'm not going to cover the conversation word for word. A detailed transcript was already submitted. The most important thing that happened is that Pharaoh asked me not to finish his paperwork with Babazel Insurance. He wanted to remain dead. While it's true that the dead have no rights, the dead also have no duty to adhere to any policies or codes of conduct. The dead do as they please. Pharaoh said in no uncertain terms, and I quote, that I was going to bring that I'm going to bring that wall down, drown every single island, and blast a hole through Golfiana as if Shango himself were to strike it down. I'm here to wreak havoc and leave destruction in my wake. If you're not interested, leave now. No one left. Instead of spending time on the actual plan of how we were going to get into Tardata Tech in the city of Miami, we spent the next few hours figuring out the logistics of even getting back to Miami. With all the gear we would need, this is when I found out that the new core leadership had made the strategic decision to pull out of the region. One, pull out of Region 1 completely and cede it to the cities. Rage is not the word. A piece of history for you static core economic warfare cooperatives. A piece of history for you. Static Core Economic Warfare Cooperative was started in Atlanta, Georgia, in the heart of Region 1. It's like a country surrendering its capital to leave Region 1. With Pharaoh dead, we were reassigned to Shell as our section chief, and her first move was to make Day, Law, Hi-Rez, and myself quartermasters. This gave us all access to the shed and the toy chest, a manifest of every asset in the core, from paper clips to ammo clips to blimps and starships, and all the reporting is in real time. Of course, there are innumerable amounts of privately owned hardware, but digits are required to carry or use certain items which are registered. It was clear after looking at the myriad of ways to get what we needed and get back to Miami, we were going to have to intercept one of our own cargo ships and take it back to port on the East Coast.